Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
Okay, Halloween edition of the toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. Are you dressed up as anything today?
I will be later. I will be. I'm going to a podcast taping this evening.
You're dressing up as cereal.
No. Dressing up as character from Zootopia as part of a whole movie theme for the Doug Loves Movies podcast.
Oh, you're going to Doug Loves Movies today?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be delightful. But that Doug Loves Movies on Halloween is weird because aren't you kind of always supposed to wear a costume?
No. There's always a name tag element.
Oh. You know what it is? I went to a Doug Loves Movies Halloween show.
Did you?
Yeah. And we dressed as the cast of Party Down.
Oh, that's great. Although not a movie.
Correct. Not a movie. But available on DVD.
If Doug had seen you, he would have said, "This is not Doug Loves Television."
Maybe he would have said that. I think he might have seen us, but I don't think he made a comment or anything.
All right, fair
regardless,
enough.
Fun show.
I've seen him a couple times. I quite enjoy it.
Is it at Cobb's?
Punchline, actually.
Punchline. All right.
Yeah. All right. Well, late night too. 9:45.
Don't forget to smoke some weed with him outside.
Easy. I'm not going straight to work, but I am working shortly thereafter.
Oh, sorry, my bad. That's right, a night show, and then that does turn into work for you shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
Sorry for presuming that someone might get high at a Doug Loves Movies taping.
Hey, no comment.
Okay, we have a bunch of stuff to talk about this week. Really across the spectrum. There's some movies, there's some TV shows. Do you mind if we start in the world of music? Because I have something I'd like to get off my chest.
Oh, okay.
So, we listen to a lot of different things. You and I, we sort of have varied tastes. And it's something that has always been important to me is to not only try to keep an open mind as best I can, but to really listen to everything all the way through and give everything a fair hearing and airing.
I'm so worried about this.
Because that's what I would, of course, want. You know, I sometimes ask you to try things that I might not necessarily think you'll like, but I'd like to get your take on. And so, I want to be treated with the same respect. So I've always listened to everything all the way through until now. And the record that forced me to deviate from this is I didn't even bother to learn the name of the album, but it's the Esperanza Spalding record. And I made an honest attempt.
Yeah. Can I stop you?
Okay.
Okay, so two songs into this, I knew I had made a horrible mistake. This is the problem with me recommending stuff without listening to it to you, of things that I know are off the beaten path. This album, which I read something that described it as like a step closer to mainstream, was not that at all. At its best, this album is sort of Bjork-y in its cinematic and bizarre nature. But it is way out there, and it's called 12 Little Spells, and that's an accurate description of what it is in a way. And very few of the spells are particularly accessible or straightforward. They almost sound, and I don't want to say this as a diss, although I imagine you'll identify with it as such. They sort of sound like songs from a musical that doesn't exist. And
I'd rather listen to a musical. I'd rather listen to the Grease soundtrack than this.
Right.
And if you know that, that's a huge leap for me. If you know how much I hate Grease.
Yeah. So I don't. Especially since we have so many things we're planning to talk about today. I don't know how much we need on this. It's a conversation like I knew you would not necessarily have any interest in having, because this is not even an album per se by like broadly popular music standards.
Yeah. I just like, you know, when people say something like, you know, oh, that's my shit. Like, this is the exact opposite of that. It's like, right. It's like music designed to kick me in the dick and make me run screaming from the room.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So it's like, it's not really even worth talking about the music itself, because it's just a thing you have zero interest in.
I am curious if you like, so you found this enjoyable?
It's not my favorite stuff, no.
Yeah.
Like, okay. You know, I often listen to albums on Spotify or SoundCloud or Bandcamp and then buy them if I like them, and I won't buy this.
Okay. Yeah, I will never listen to an Esperanza Spalding record again.
Yeah, well, that's a little bit of a bummer, but I mean, probably not that big of a bummer for anybody. I honestly think if I had had you listen to her previous album, you'd have been like, this is interesting and she is super talented. Not necessarily my thing, but I get it.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, I had no animus coming in. I had always heard nothing but good things about her. She got cool hair, right. You know?
Yeah.
I like Artie people and things, and I don't mind necessarily weird, but this is just not my weird, man.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean, and like I said, as soon as I was listening to it, I was like, oh boy, this was not a good idea. We had like six different albums I listed off, and this is by far the worst one I could have had you listen
to. I feel like I had a hand in picking it, and I was like mad at myself. I was we could have listened to something else, and I just, man.
Whew. Well, we did. We listened to two other things.
Okay. We did listen to two other things, so we could talk about that. All right. Open Mike Eagle. Felt a lot better about Open Mike Eagle.
So I'm actually really interested to hear what you think about this, because I thought this – I mean, I imagine at least one thing you thought was that it was as described, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I mean, you don't get a lot of dudes rapping about podcasts, you know, and their podcast flow.
Right. But he's super clever.
Yeah, it's clever. It's definitely Adult Swim rap. I don't know that, like, I, like, love his flow, you know, like, but it's an enjoyable listen, and Lord knows, more people need to make six-song records, you know? As a barrier, you know, we talked about this
And I find it also just like from a musical perspective, really interesting and creative and sort of original sounding.
Yeah. It was a perfect amount of sampler. And I would also say like right when I was like, okay, I think I've had enough, it ended. So it was perfect, you know, for me in that way. And I will listen to this again. I thought it was pretty cool.
The cool thing about Open Mike Eagle is because he's, you know, as described the sort of Adult Swim rap crew, he's prolific. So maybe even rather than listen to this again, I would highly recommend diving in, because he's, like I said, he's creative and a lot of his things sound different in a lot of ways, and others might strike you more than this one or what have you. But I recommend for everyone to kind of dive into his stuff, because if nothing else, he's clever and smart, and the music is almost always good.
I would check out more. I'd like to go back to check out this, because I put on the Esperanza Spalding right afterwards, and kind of, it sort of mind erased some of it for me a little bit. Yeah. Oh, man.
I understand that. But for what it's worth, his last album, which I think was called Brick Body Kids Still Daydream, something like that, was, you know, by Adult Swim rap standards, sort of a breakout album. Very well reviewed and all that good stuff. And I would recommend it as a good spot to land for him also.
Okay. I will try to check that out. Do you want to talk about the other record that we listened to?
Yes. This one might be the one I have the most interesting or at least complicated thoughts about.
Okay, so let's talk about the new Robin, and I'd like to hear your interesting and complicated thoughts.
Well, what's your relationship with Robin in general, would you say?
Robin is like your cool, really fun person at the edge of your friend circle that you, when you see them, not all that often, but you really enjoy it, and you're always like, oh, that person's cool, but also you don't hang out with them all the time. Does that make sense? Cool. She's like, yeah, that's sort of where I'm at. Like,
yeah,
I listen to a ton of Robin.
Don't see that often.
She has a few songs that for me are just way up there, and that I am fired up anytime they come on. But
they came out in the 90s, right?
No, not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
Like Dancing on My Own is like an all-time jam for me, and that's a mid-2000s Robin joint.
Yeah, that's a jam.
Were you thinking of like Show Me Love?
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm more into her later stuff when she got a little more weird.
Okay. Well, I think we have similar tastes, maybe not specifically song-wise, but level of interest in Robin. So this album, which I think it's 9 tracks, so it also benefits from, I mean, it's not as short as the Open Mike Eagle album, but it benefits from like not wasting too much of my time. It's a pretty tight 9 tracks. The thing is, I feel like Robin, as she often does, made some interesting stylistic choices, sound-wise choices, that are interesting but not necessarily appealing to me. I think, like, okay, for one, most notably, especially the first 5 or 7 tracks, like, it's just a very sparse album.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like they took the wrong stuff out.
Hmm.
Because it's very glittery and, like, pop production-y. I would almost rather have heard, like, an acoustic sparse versus a synthy sparse.
See, I really, for the most part, like the production on this record, and it's sort of like, it made me think a little bit about A Star Is Born, you know what I mean? And like the conversation we sort of had about whether the movie is positing that pop music can be like authentic and really an expression of a person, because I feel like this, you know, Robin is a person who sort of lays waste to that argument. Like, she's working in,
right,
in this really obvious pop techno idiom, and yet I think a lot of her songs are super true emotionally and authentic. You know what I mean?
Definitely, and that's why I'm sort of.
And I feel like Bradley Cooper's character would even agree with that. You know what I mean? Right? Like, so
yeah. And that's why I'm kind of hedging here. Is I think this is just a taste issue for me, because it's almost like I see what you're doing. And I feel like Hansel when he's talking about Sting in Zoolander, and they're like Sting would also be an idol, you know, all the music he's been making over the years. I don't necessarily listen to it, but the fact that he's been making it all this time, I really respect that. Like, it's not the like, if you gave me the elevator pitch, like, hi, I'm Robin, my next album is going to be 9 sparse, heartfelt tracks that really represent me and hopefully speak to my fan base, I'd be like, cool, I'll check that out. But then as it turns out, maybe her truth is not so interesting or not even interesting. It's not so much something I especially want to listen to.
Yeah, see, like sparse techno, I think, is much more in my wheelhouse maybe than yours.
Yes, I think that's true.
Yeah, but like, I enjoyed those first 5 songs. But I do also want to say, because, you know, hey, Make Shorter Records is sort of one of my corners, and that you should be really, you'd think I'd be really excited by an 8-song Robin album. Is it 8? 8 or 9?
I think it's 9, yeah.
But, like, if you're going to go away for 8 years... You know, and go through all this stuff and
show me love. Is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, like, you know, she had some stuff going on. It's been a long time since she made a record,
No, no, I mean, you know, rhetorically speaking, metaphorically speaking.
No, I mean,
give me 12 to 14. Show me some extra song love.
I was going to say a little bit more like if you're only going to do 9 songs, then they better be 9 bangers. And,
okay. Yeah. Well,
and this album sags. And like that, the Beach 2K20 song is like a half-ass atrocity. Like it's like, what are we doing here?
Don't you think, like, Between the Lines and ever the maybe the songs around it are kind of the most bumping, though?
Yeah, but, like, Between the Lines and Ever Again are not bad. And maybe I just really hated that song, and it just seems such, like, a tossed-off piece of junk that I don't – you know what I mean? Like, you've been away that long, and you have real emotional stuff, and then you're, like, this song where you're just, like, cooing about Take Me to the Party over this just super generic bad house beat.
It very much feels like let's sneak a radio song in before
radio
the end
would,
of this
yeah, thing. But I don't even think radio would play that. You know what I mean?
Well, like, maybe. Well, it's an ill-conceived attempt, as most attempts of that.
Yeah, like
are.
That was the your ass in those jeans song of this record. I guess I don't know. It was just it's really bad, and I feel like on a 9-song album. After a multi-year absence, like that's sort of unforgettable. Like if you're gonna make a 9-song record, it better be solid 9 songs. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. And just in general, I would say I would want more oomph after 8 years.
Mm, yeah. It's weird because a lot of the writer narrative is like, oh, you can hear pain all over this record. You know what I mean? I guess you know,
can, but like, how much of it?
Yeah. Like, I don't know that I totally got that. But yeah. I enjoyed listening to it, and I would recommend that you check it out. And I think that for the space that she occupies of people making unabashedly mainstream pop, but doing it in a really interesting and personal way,
it's still that.
Yeah, I recommend it. I definitely liked it, I think, more than you did.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Should we you want to talk about mid-90s?
Yeah. I saw it last night.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's fresh in your mind. What's your take?
Okay. So,
by the way, for those of you who don't know, mid-90s is the directorial and I think writing debut of Jonah Hill.
Yeah, I think it's all him, top to bottom, basically.
He's not in the movie
right.
at all. But it's certainly his vision and baby and passion project. And it's, it's about a kid.
Producer, writer, director.
Yeah, in California, trying to find his way amongst a crew of skaters.
Yes, it is very much a skating movie. It is shot like a skating movie. So, okay, first things first, I liked it. I think it's a good movie. I think I'm going to end up talking about how it's not a great movie to a degree that might do it a disservice. But so I want to put that out to start. Like, I highly recommend this film. It's a good indie movie. It's interesting and unique. The acting performances by kids who were primarily skateboarders before this film, those are really impressive, I thought. Almost everybody, and Lucas Hedges is also good, but almost everybody in most of this movie is a non-actor.
Yep.
Here's the thing, though. It's not great. And it wasn't quite what I expected. And it's very much in the check out my quirky indie thing genre. And not, I don't want to say not funny, because it's funny a couple times, but it's not, and I don't want to pigeonhole Jonah Hill, because by no means did I think this was like a comedy per se, but I did think it was more of like a dramedy. And really this was kind of, it was more quirky drama than comedy drama, if that makes sense. And it, there's not much to it plot-wise, but I'll say this: I'm more impressed First of all, as a first movie, it's pretty exceptional. And I'm more impressed with Jonah Hill as a director than as a writer producer. Does that make sense?
It does. You know, I came into this maybe with less pre-existing expectation.
I had seen very the trailer. High expectations, which I think is part of the issue.
I had seen the trailer, and that's it. But I am all the way 100% in on this movie. I do think it's a great movie. And to me, the thing that I sort of kept coming back to was, like, it felt a lot like a companion piece of 13. And 13 is much more of a verite, look like it's shot in like sort of home movie fashion or webcam fashion at times.
Right.
This is much more polished and certainly has much more directorial spit shine happening, but I thought that was also very much in service of the movie. I loved the direction. I loved all the close-ups. This movie has some amazing tracking shots. Yep. Sort of influenced, I think, a lot by skater films.
Totally. Have you heard any interviews with Jonah Hill?
I have not. I sort of avoided, I know he kind of did the Ringer car wash, and I saved all that stuff.
Let me tell you this. He is a skater kid, and specifically, to reference the movie, he was fourth grade. So he was the videographer. So this is 100% an homage to those skateboard videos. And I think that's what I mean when I say that I'm most impressed by the direction. Is it's a home run of both concept and execution.
Yeah, but I loved also the way that a lot of the non-skating things were shot. Yep. I loved like the party scenes. You know what I mean? Like the way that those were shot.
All the stuff within the house. The way he shot the home life was awesome, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it I think he coaxed some amazing acting performances out of a lot of non-actors.
Yeah, that's why that's the real takeaway to me is Jonah Hill has a chance to be a formidable director. Truly exceptional.
Yeah, and all of these things it all felt very true to me. You know, there's some Hollywood in it, but it felt like so much of this could really effing happen, you know?
Yeah.
And it reminded me, it took me back to Kids and some of those sort of 90s indie kind of vibe. And I hadn't felt that in a long time. And I had a really good time watching this movie.
Yeah.
Even though it's not necessarily a fun movie. You know what I mean? It was a great film experience for me.
I think I agree with all of that. So, like I said, the more I've been thinking about it, the more I've been saying to myself, really, I don't know what you're nitpicking about. Because if I try to think, okay, well, what was actually wrong with that movie? It's really nothing. So I don't know exactly what it is, but in fact, even my criticisms aren't even necessarily problems. We like plenty of things that are short on plot, especially when they're this well directed or executed or acted. I don't know. I don't know what it is that's holding me back.
There's there's a really great feel for little moments too, the kid's in the hospital, Stevie's in the hospital, and his big brother gets him an orange juice. At that point, that act has been imbued with so much meaning, set up in ways that are not sort of really telegraphed at all.
Yeah,
to me, that's you're right. It's not, the writing is not nearly as flashy because it's a lot of sort of verite style dialogue. It feels like a lot of it could have been improvised or whatever. But you realize a lot of things have sort of been set up along the way, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually, I think it was less improvised than it appeared because in one of the interviews, I believe Jonah Hill intimated that he wanted them to improvise more than they did because the kids kind of wanted to prove they could act.
Yeah.
Which they can. I mean, they really all, not every single one of those kids is a, and it's probably because they're actual skaters, but every one of them is 100% authentic. Particularly the little star is, I mean, for that to be your first real acting gig is pretty outstanding.
Yeah, but I would say all the skaters, Ramon, fuck
all
shit.
All of them.
You know?
Yes. All of them. And it all feels so true to, like, I wasn't a skater kid, but certainly I knew those kids. And it all felt so true to who they were. And, yeah, like I said, all that stuff is really well done. And more than anything, you use the word feel, which I think is perfect. It just, for a first-time director, and granted, he's been an actor and part of creating roles in movies in the past and all that. I get it. He's got plenty of Hollywood experience. But for this to be your first effort directorially shows an incredible feel for filmmaking.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And, you know, when you I didn't completely love Maniac, but when you put those things together,
it's a great actor.
It's pretty good,
too.
Pretty good year for Jonah Hill, I think, and just in terms of, like, really, you know, challenging himself and trying some interesting shit. You know what I mean?
Well, and just like, who saw this career for Jonah Hill? Like, hats off to him, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of that comes from, like, the Wolf of Wall Street sort of era. And I think he sort of realized, like, you know, in Moneyball and understanding, like, oh, wow, like, there's some, you know, real drama and pathos in there. And what else, you know, maybe now people will let me do more than be, like, you know, the 21 Jump Street super bad kind of kid, you know?
Well, but also, I mean, I think it took not only some foresight, but probably some pretty incredible willpower to get and take those roles in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, I gotta believe 80% of the offers and better money were coming in for silly comedies.
Yep. It does sort of remind me too, like, how about Judd Apatow, Talent Scout?
Yep. The best.
You know what I mean? Like, when you look over the people that have sort of been in his troupe and then some of the stuff that they have gone on to do, it's
the best. He found all these people to be be in comedies, but he understood that the best comedies have real actors in them because they have to feel authentic even when they're being stupid and silly.
Yep.
And that's why all these people turn out to be such good actors.
Yep. And we didn't discuss this in the pre-show, but I think it was in the homework as we jump into TV. But I thought maybe we should mention, I did watch something from the, you know, a satellite actor in the Judd Apatow universe, the Adam Sandler special. Did you wind up watching that?
Yeah. Yeah. Did we not mention that pre-show?
We did not mention it pre-show.
I'm very excited about this.
It is a thing that we watched, and I'm extremely sorry that I did. Like,
you're kidding me.
No, I hated it. Yeah.
Wow.
I really, you know, like, we talked about it a little bit on the show last week. I like, you know, I was interested to see Adam Sandler stand up and where that would feel. And I just feel like, I don't know if I enjoyed Sandler in the Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore era because it was good now, or just because I was a certain level of maturity and able to, and ready to handle it. But I just, there is no, other than the occasional Paul Thomas Anderson super dramatic Sandler, there's no more Sandler left for me because I'm so out on this. I hated every minute of it. Like, I thought every one of these songs was stupid. I thought the jokes were corny, and I'm a hard pass on the Adam Sandler comedy specials. I'm kind of stunned. I'm stunned that you would not have did not have the same reaction. I thought this was going to be a 2-minute discussion.
No, not only did I not have the same reaction, I had the polar opposite reaction. And I would say with 100% confidence that it is you that have changed.
Okay.
You have changed. Because you're right about one thing. It is stupid. And actually pretty corny. But so is they're all going to laugh at you. So was every song
Lunch,
you
I,
did.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
Saturday
Lunch Lady
Night.
Land is corny. Yeah, I guess. But, like,
the,
it's not stupid.
The Hanukkah song?
Yeah.
The Hanukkah song is as corny as it gets.
But it's, like, endearing. Like, these songs are not endearing.
Oh, I thought they were pretty... I don't know if endearing is the right word, but relatable and hilarious. And I laughed my balls off. I just think he's... Bar Mitzvah Boy made me laugh as much as the Hanukkah song did. And he's 52, but to me, he still does this innocently stupid and funny thing as well as anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and
see,
I find that...
It's not funny when you're 52, though, anymore.
I disagree. I think you're too grown up. I think that's the problem. And I'm sorry, but I am not at all grown up, and I just laughed a ton.
Maybe I've lost my childlike innocence.
Like,
I don't know.
Think real hard for a second about Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, which is all him talking in goo goo voice and getting kicked in the balls.
Yeah. I agree, but also at some point, like we've seen that. You know what I mean? We've already seen him do that.
I don't know.
As
yes.
well as he's going to
okay.
do it.
If you're looking for evolution and a modern twist from Adam Sandler, I guess you're right that this does not deliver. But if you like Adam Sandler and you would like some more that you haven't seen yet, I don't think the quality has changed much. I really don't. I think it is really funny. There's stupid, stupid songs. You know, 90% of the songs he sings are one-verse songs with stupid twists at the end that I literally cackled out loud at. And, you know, whatever. Maybe it's the right combination of weed and immaturity, but... This is a special for Adam Sandler fans, undoubtedly.
I saw someone tweet, Adam Sandler's new special is the Nanette of men who started feeling emotion in 2010. And
really?
I feel like that sums it up. Yeah, sums it up. Well.
I don't get that. I don't think it's...
If you're emotionally 8 years old, it probably hits you right in the gut.
Oh. Oh, well, that's not how I would have interpreted that. That's not how I would have interpreted that comedy.
Okay.
By the way, it's getting pretty good reviews.
Yeah, all right. Yeah,
I would have. I interpret that comment as it being like an attempt at revolutionary emotion that falls flat, and I don't think it's that at all.
No,
I think
yeah,
it's
I don't think anyone would describe
Adam
it as an attempt at revolutionary emotion. Like, how could you?
So I don't know what the Nanette.
It's just so basic and dumb. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, it's basic and dumb and super funny.
Yeah, I just can't go with you on the third part. and I, you know, I like some dumb funny things. You know,
I don't look. All I can tell you is this tickled me in exactly the spot that Billy Madison did, yeah. or I owned both of his first two. You know, sketch albums. I loved Adam Sandler then. I haven't really locked into Adam Sandler in like 15 years because he's been doing kid stuff.
He's still doing kid stuff. That's what I'm saying.
No, but like...
He's just cursing a little now.
Nah, there's a difference. Mm. There's a difference between immature stuff and kid stuff. This is immature stuff. No question. But... It's not kid stuff.
This tickled me in the place that Esperanza Spalding did.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about a different comedy. What'd you think about Hasan Minhaj's Patriot Act?
This was a good week for me. I also loved this. I think this is the first weekly Netflix show that I will definitely watch this weekend.
Hmm.
I'm going to put this right next to John Oliver. I love this style. I want to learn and laugh. I'm good with that.
I'm 100% with you in I want to learn and laugh, and I definitely think it accomplished its goal. It is well executed, for sure. Much more successful than Michelle Wolf's show was executed. And mm-hmm. I have love for Michelle Wolf. I think she's super talented as well. I'm not really trying to shade her. I just think this comes off as a better, more interesting show. I think the idea of sort of structuring it basically as one to two monologues that sort of allow him to deep dive, and they're well researched.
They really are sort of PowerPoint presentations, but they're funny and enjoyable.
You know, I love, too, that it's really coming from, like, a heightened brown person perspective, you
know?
Well,
I thought...
And goes deep in some of those areas, you know?
I thought he made a savvy and interesting strategic choice to open with a sort of takedown of his own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
in a way that was 100% about pro-diversity, but looking at how maybe his side isn't necessarily as open to that as you might think they would be.
Right. I mean, it's easy for white people to do that. You know, most late night white hosts do some version of that. And it's easy for minorities to point out white people doing that, obviously. And there's nothing wrong with that. They ought to do that. But I think it's smart of him to open his hopefully broadly appealing Netflix show by saying, hey, my folks aren't innocent in this thing either, and we all got to pull the rope the same direction. And again, most importantly to me, it's both funny and interesting and educational. Like, that's what I'm here for, and that's what I got. And, like, watching Patriot Act and Last Week Tonight back-to-back on a Sunday sounds like a wonderful hour to me.
I also love that it's really, like, all of that feeling extends right down to the audience. You know what I mean? Like, you sort of look at the front row and see someone in a hijab, and you see, yep. You know, white people and Asians, and like, it's just, like, there's something about that that felt sort of weird and revolutionary, you know, which in itself feels odd. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to like here. I'm sort of hedging a little bit on the I can't wait to watch this every Sunday in something that's not necessarily a fault of its own, although it is sort of like last to the space. Like, it's a crowded space. The, like, Daily Show alum, you know, doing well-researched and or videotaped monologue about current day events, like, but there's a lot of that on television, and I'm already watching Oliver, and I'm already watching Sam B. And,
oh, you are?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't watch
else?
Colbert, but a lot of people do. You know, Michelle Wolf took a stab at this. You know, there's a Jordan Klepper's got the show that's after the actual Daily Show. There's the actual Daily Show that piles up on my DVR. So,
Jim Jeffries. Yeah, I get all that. But to me, that's what I'm saying is I'm not watching any of those other than Last Week Tonight.
Oh, well, I would. We may need to then visit Samantha Bee. Again, I think maybe we talked about her on the pod at some point, but
perhaps it's not that I don't like Samantha Bee. It's just, you know, whatever. We talk all the time about how crowded the TV landscape is, but I, from what I have watched, and I don't think I've actually ever seen Samantha Bee's show.
Oh,
or maybe
right.
I saw one segment from it or something. But I find this to be the one I think is actually the best executed, even maybe more so than John Oliver, although that show is really in its zone and knows what it is and is knocking it out of the park.
Oh, wow. Yeah. See, I mean, and
I just like
no
the conception of
this because I really like this, but, like, I don't know. John Oliver feels like a near perfect execution of the.
No,
the
I agree. Like, don't get me wrong. That's a better show right now. I'm just saying from, like, a conceit standpoint, I really like this. I think it's really well.
All right.
It's a great idea, well, and he did it well.
We sort of were talking about homework then. I really feel like we need to add the Sam B show to the homework then for this week. Because a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, not necessarily in terms of execution, because it's a different – that's a more segmented show. There's some, you know, a lot of pre-tape bits, and she does the some more of the interview things that you did do from The Daily Show. But the monologues
more like
are righteous.
Daily Show, right?
And it's certainly the – you know, you could sort of see the wheels of Hasan Minhaj kind of going, like, well, what's my way into this? Well, I can be more personal and sort of tell this story as an Asian immigrant. And Sam B is much more the feminist kind of spin on this. But that show's really well done, and you should at least watch it a couple times and have a take on it and see where you would slot this into the universe. But the reality is, you know,
it's a crowded
universe. Talked about the show. We talked about this a lot on the show for in many other discussions. Like, the relentlessness of the news and the news cycle is tiring, and there yes. are, we have to take breaks from it at times. And there have been weeks, as much as I enjoy Sam B's show, I sort of will bow out for a couple weeks because I'm just like, I can't watch another show about the news.
Well, I think that's the other appeal of both this and John Oliver's. While they mention and refer to the news, they are usually more about specific topics.
Yes. But everybody's doing that. Everyone kind of starts with the, hey, here's what happened this week, and then here's our deeper dive into a singular subject. Here's a thing we can do. Here's a, game that we play. Here's a way we're screwing with somebody. Like, it's a lot of the same tropes. And I say that in my I'm tired voice. Like, a lot of it is super entertaining. I'm not.
Yes.
But
yeah. No, but it is tiring.
A lot
as well.
Of it is the same. Yeah. So, yeah. that's where I'm at. Like, it's really good. I have no qualms with the execution of the show. I thought it was really well done. I don't know if I am ready to make room for it yet. And that's right. Less about the show than just more it is about how much of this content is now available,
Excellent.
So, all right. And then the final TV thing we talked about this week.
Mm-hmm.
Bodyguard, which I continually want to call The Bodyguard.
Yeah, you got to stop that.
I got to stop that. I'll go first on this one.
Okay.
I was super into the pilot of this show. I feel like
I'm interested in where this is headed, but go on.
I really liked the way that the terrorism scenes were shot, the tension of it is like super gripping. I forget the name of the guy. Is it Richard Madden? Is that the name of the lead? Who's the guy that
Rob Stark?
Rob Stark, yeah, you know what I mean. Whatever Rob Stark's name is.
Yeah, his name's Rob Stark. What do you mean?
He's excellent.
He's very good.
Yeah.
Richard Madden is right.
I could listen to him say ma'am like mom all day. Sort of the way that they sort of do modern media paranoia, I think, is really interesting, and just the show keeps you on edge. They set up his home life really well. As the show has gone on, and like the inevitable ill-conceived romance that you feel starting to get telegraphed like plays out, like I'm a little less interested than I was. But man, the pilot was just a pure rush, and really anytime they do a terrorism scene, it's also pure rush. The political intrigue, not maybe as well done as some of the other shows, I feel like.
So did you only watch
I'm through
the
like,
pilot then?
No. I think I'm through three episodes.
Oh, okay.
But cool. The pilot I liked the most.
Okay. So, cause I couldn't tell if you were saying the pilot, cause.
No, I'm saying the pilot was awesome. The successive episodes I've liked less is where I'm coming from.
Okay. I don't know that I saw a huge difference, if I'm honest. But I think most of the stuff you said applies to the other episodes, too. I mean, I guess you're right. There's also some weirdness with the romance. But in many ways, I feel like this is somewhere in between like a 24 that has the really well-done action. And I never saw this, but I would imagine Homeland with the sort of palace intrigue in the spy community, but some light moralization on government and war and terrorism and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I would say action super successful, palace intrigue less successful, moralization even less successful, romance unsuccessful for me.
Yeah, the romance isn't much, but I actually thought For I chose Homeland because I understand it to be sort of popcorny.
I could almost say the same thing about Homeland, really, to be honest.
Right, that's what I mean. That's why I chose it, because that's the analogy I'm making. But
the action on Homeland, I feel like, got less successful over time, and that's eventually why I had to bail.
Uh-huh.
And also, it was just so silly at some points,
Right. Well, that's what I'd say, is that this is not silly yet. And I do think there's at least a setup of more, maybe not moralization, but like thematic weight that is at least marginally interesting, yeah, if somewhat.
The silly potential exists, though, doesn't it? And I'm sorry, this is going to be a spoiler. But when you find out the guy trying to assassinate the politician just happens to be dude's like best friend.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
like
a little much.
Oh, come on.
So like,
you know.
Right. So you're right. It's on that line. But I thought I think I'm in the same spot you are through three. Like, I'm definitely enjoying it. Like, it's not deep or exceptional from on that side of things, but it's definitely a ride.
Yeah, it's a ride, and I'm going to keep watching the ride. But I am getting some diminishing returns as the ride lurches forward. You know,
fair enough.
That's where I'm at. But like I said, love the pilot and would recommend that to anybody. And I'm not like, it's not like I'm like, love the pilot, hate the rest. I'm just, my eye is starting to cock a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
Okay.
Right. I get it.
All right. Did we cover everything? I feel like we did.
I think we did, man. I feel like we just hammered it right on out. Does that sound weird? I didn't mean that to sound weird.
I got a sports topic, or we can talk homework.
Oh, what's your sports topic? I'm fascinated to know.
Well, so Cleveland had a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day.
Uh-huh.
The other day, right? With a coach and two coaches getting fired. On
three, if you count the offensive coordinator.
Right. On two, more, you know, I mean, I guess you could, you'd still label the Cleveland Browns are improved, but you could still label them as hopeless, wouldn't you say?
I mean, I guess it depends what you mean by that.
The
right?
Cavaliers, and the Cavaliers are definitively hopeless at this point, right? Like, hope is
yes.
Colin Sexton. So
yeah. The Cavaliers, in any sort of short term discussion or even midterm, are hopeless.
And so it sort of got me thinking of, like, is, you can't say Cleveland is the most hopeless sports town because the Indians are still the actual World Series contenders.
Yeah.
At present. But I was, you know, it sort of got me into, like, a who's got it worse, you know?
who's got it worse than us?
And, yeah, exactly. And, you know, to me, the town I currently live in and the town that I am from are very prime candidates to that. And I'm wondering if you could think of anybody. I would throw Buffalo in that mix. Buffalo only has two teams, but they are both pretty hopeless. And Buffalo cares deeply about both of those hopeless teams. Can you think of anybody who's just got sort of less of a chance at a title? Like, at least Atlanta's teams are, like, good. They've just had a lot of, like, they've had 30, you know, most years of almost entirely playoff heartbreak. And, you know, the playoff heartbreak here is legendary. And I would say both cities have suffered some just all-time gut punch, you know, playoff defeats. Just playoff sadness after playoff sadness. And Washington gets off the list with a Stanley Cup win this year. Like, who's got it worse than Minnesota and Atlanta?
I mean, can you count like the B squad from New York? Because Mets, Jets, Nets is pretty traumatic.
Yeah, I mean, look, Mets, Jets plus any other really NBA, right? Because it's not like the Knicks, it gets any better with the Knicks.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, if you're a Mets Jets basketball fan in New York, it doesn't get much worse than that.
And I think their hockey teams are pretty much suck too,
right? Oh, the Rangers.
Right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I won't pretend.
I won't pretend to know either. I guess it's true. Really, I mean, it's kind of odd, but I also sort of feel like that group has sucked and sucked for a while. But there's also been a fair amount of happiness mixed in over the last 20-ish, 25-ish, 30 years, right?
Right.
Right. You know, if you're a Mets fan, you've had some pleasant things.
You played in the World Series at least, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and obviously, look, the Braves have played in a lot of playoff games, and the Falcons have made 2 Super Bowls in the last 30 years. But, like I said, a little heartbreak coming on the other side of that.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I don't know. I guess you could put them in the conversation. Is there? Can you think of anybody else?
Not really.
Philly's off that list now. You know, they had a World Series and a Super Bowl over the last, you know, few. I think that's it. I think those are the most tortured, right?
I'm trying to think, yeah. Well, I mean, it's like Arizona. I guess they were in the Super Bowl not that long
ago. Yeah, World Series in 2001 too, right?
I mean, that's 17 years ago, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's a win. They got a win.
Houston got a win. Dallas?
Yeah, I just, you know, the Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, screw Dallas, but.
I mean, what was the last Super Bowl for Dallas? Late 90s? Mid 90s?
Yeah. Yeah, early 90s.
Yeah,
really,
and they
right.
won, and they won an NBA title in the 2000s. So I'm going to say.
Yeah, they did. They did. Yeah. They don't, so they're not really in there. Could we do like Northern Florida? Because you have the Heat in Southern Florida and the Marlins with their weird few wins. But if you're talking like Tampa, Jacksonville, Orlando.
There is a lot of hopelessness there. Bucks did win a Super Bowl in, what, 2000?
That's right, yeah.
But
that was, yeah, yeah.
But you're right. It's been pretty rough since then.
Uh-huh. Pretty rough there.
Yeah, they're in that mix. I can't really think of anybody else other than, what about, say, Nashville? Maybe they don't have enough teams.
Right, that's the problem. Now we're going to get into, you know, the Carolinas, but they have the Hurricanes. But I'll tell you what also, the Capitals notwithstanding, Washington is a train wreck.
It's been a pretty bad run, yeah. It's been a pretty bad run for Washington.
Yeah, and now the Nationals are headed to the basement.
You can't put someone who like literally just won a title like they're still drinking beer from it.
Right? No. Yeah. I'm just saying, take them out of it, and it gets ugly quick.
It sure does. Yeah. All right. Well, if anybody can think of anybody who has it worse than Minnesota and Atlanta right now, over the week, feel free to tweet at us. What's your Twitter handle? At the Kolsky, yeah?
Yeah.
K-O-L-S-K-Y, and I'm at Madden on Air, if you want to tweet either one of us with your suggestions for who's got it worse.
Who's got it worse than us?
Nobody! All right. Yeah. Let's jump into homework.
Indeed.
All right, so we got Samantha B. Show, whose name, man, the memory thing is getting really bad with me. Like, in real time, you can watch it happen.
Full Frontal is the name
full,
of the show.
Thank you, Full Frontal. I watch it every week. It's on my DVR. Can't remember the name.
I do not.
All right, so we got that. I think we're both all in and checking out Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
The reviews I've seen have been mixed on Bohemian
correct.
Rhapsody. But
that's what I was just going
to
say.
I'm still all in. I just even if it's doesn't bad, I'm okay with that. I just want to see what it's going to turn out to be.
Correct.
So, yeah. And then what else you got?
Well, I feel like when we talked about this pre-show, you rejected my other ideas, did you not? Oh, was there another movie we were talking about seeing?
Well, we were talking about
Blade
yes, Race,
First
but
Man.
that's not tier yet. So I think we just settled on First Man, which we had talked about maybe doing in the past. So we're going to go see First Man. And yeah, I feel like First Man, Bohemian Rhapsody, and... and Full Frontal, that feels like enough because we all have enough to do.
We also did forget something today, I just realized.
What's that?
The Shop.
Oh, we did forget The Shop. Yeah, let's talk about The Shop. That'll be your homework. Can I also add to your homework before we talk about The Shop? Go vote.
Yeah, vote.
Vote. Like, no, there's no excuses. I don't care. Vote. I'm not telling you to vote. I'm kind of telling you to vote for somebody. If you listen to the show, you know where I'm at on that. But whether you listen to me or not, go vote.
Yeah.
because Christ, it really does make a difference. Like that argument is so like been completely blown out of the water. Please go vote. Okay.
Even if it doesn't, how hard is it? Just do it.
Yeah, really. Like, it really doesn't take very long.
90% of states, you can vote today and mail it in and never think about it again.
Exactly. And even if you wait, it's 20 minutes out of your life to actually take part in our society. And,
Yay, society, democracy. It's great.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to stop lecturing now. Okay. So speaking of lecturing, the shop, everybody.
Really?
No. It's fine. The shop occasionally veers into lecturing, but occasionally veers into a lot of things. And I mostly found it enjoyable. A lot of the fears that I had about the shop, being that it's a stilted and conscious, free flowing conversation. You know what I mean? Where people are certainly are aware that there's an audience and are putting aspects forth. And that's not really like a barbershop, like a lot of that stuff. That's all true, but like it doesn't really get in the way of anything.
No, that was one of the things I wrote down. Like, yeah, it's produced. What show isn't? Conversational or otherwise? Like, you think Talking Dead isn't heavily produced? Like, everything is
produced.
Welcome to 2018.
I would describe Talking Dead as more poorly produced.
Yes, agreed. Yes. Like, yeah,
conversations that aren't produced in some way are bad, typically. Everything is produced, but the question is, like, I think sometimes it's a little bit more how visible are the strings. You know what I mean?
Well, and I even if the strings occasionally are pretty visible, I also think there is some interesting and honest stuff here. Like, I found it interesting to hear Odell Beckham talk about privacy, and maybe more than he even realized, conveying how much that is the part of the whole business that shakes him, that he's not really ever been comfortable with.
Yeah, see, that's interesting, because that was one of the things that I found not super interesting.
Really? I mean, it's not that original,
because
he
just didn't it was just like this. He just gave the basic fame rant, but that's fine. Like, I get where you're coming from, because I at least for me, it was a rare opportunity to see him being relaxed and candid. He's sometimes candid, but usually not really both of those things, and that was kind of neat.
I felt
the show was a little bit more successful when it was masterful people talking about what it's like to be masterful.
How about this?
That's a really interesting show to me.
Well, I also thought Drake actually just did his actual diss track back at Pusha T. And that's orchestrated. I get it. But
That part was highly... I'm just going to read to you... this is straight from my notes. I took some notes on this show. The Drake segment is by far the least interesting thing that happened in these two episodes.
I can see why you'd say that, because if you're it is the most telegraphed.
It's the most telegraphed. It is the longest. It's Drake being emo.
It's all of those things. It's funny, because I also saw a Drake concert this week, and everything Drake involved served to confirm everything I believed about Drake, which is that he's exceptionally talented and calculated and knows exactly what he's doing, and as a result is kind of boring and not as good as I think he could be if he pushed himself as an artist.
Like, slurping basketball fan is the only context in which I enjoy Drake.
And I'm here for that. Some of that here.
I'm here for there was a little of that here. I'm here for Drake in a Doris Burke homemade Doris Burke sweatshirt all day.
Understand,
long.
It's not that I enjoy Drake in this context per se. It's that I find the whole orchestration of it interesting. And to your point, to move on from Drake, the best parts are Jon Stewart being the sort of host.
Yeah, that was also in my notes. And I would like to see more people like John Stewart.
Well, Maverick Carter tries to do that.
Yes, he does.
After John Stewart's gone. And it's clearly not as effective, although he's not bad at it. He's a smart, interesting guy who does a decent job of asking sort of leading questions.
I agree. He largely comes off great, and there's no shade. You know, there's no shame in being not as good at hosting something as Jon Stewart. You know what I mean?
No, like, but if exactly. But if there was one takeaway for me, it was I would watch a show every week where Jon Stewart and Draymond Green just discuss the issues of the week.
100%. But this sort of, it sort of gets to something that I think this show would be stronger with a little bit more diversity of the types of people. I thought the second episode with Drake was less successful because it was just sort of like, here's some basketball players and here's some rappers. And that's fine. Like, it was, that's not bad. Like, LeBron and Mo Bamba having a conversation was very interesting at times. You know what I mean? Yes. But like,
and also LeBron
it was
and Drake
more
to me
interesting,
interesting
with the Jon Stewart in the mix, or even, you know, even Snoop Dogg. You know what I mean? Just people coming with more life perspectives and also talking candidly, I thought made for a better show.
Yeah, the way Snoop Dogg talked about a couple of things, about sort of seeing the world and seeing his effect on different people and different cultures. And, you know, this is the point. There is a lot of interesting stuff in here.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts was Draymond's first sort of extended comment is essentially he's talking about LeBron in a very frank Draymond-esque way, basically saying LeBron wasn't shit until 4 years ago, which to me is so hilarious. Yeah, he'd already won two titles at that point.
Yeah, but like totally meaning it complimentary. Like it wasn't, it's weird. Realize afterwards, like, well, that was pretty backhanded, but like.
Yes, he's so sincere and he's being complimentary 100%, but he's definitely intimates that like those first two titles weren't shit. And so he says this, he says, you know, has maybe 25 seconds, which is a lot in a row, where the basic point is the reason LeBron wasn't shit before is because he didn't have enough attitude. He wasn't confident enough. He didn't have enough bravado. And to Draymond, that means everything, which is perfect. It's so perfect for Draymond and such an interesting window into who he is as a person. But also, you know, he's incredibly thoughtful about all this stuff and smart. It's just that's the sort of stuff that to me, I'll watch the overproduced commentary 10 times out of 10 to get to those nuggets.
Yeah, and LeBron is largely thoughtful and smart too. It's less of a surprise because you've heard LeBron talk so much. Although, well, I did find it simply exhilarating to hear him cursing.
I do too.
You know what I mean?
That's the first thing I wrote down was concerted effort to swear. He's clearly like, this is the place I use the F word a lot and the N word. And it's like, while I don't think he probably talks like that quite that extremely all the time, I do think it's much closer to how he probably is when he's with his friends. And here's the other thing about LeBron.
But didn't you also sort of feel like, I'm also going to tell the story about the time I got a perm? You know what I mean? On my barbershop show. Like, there's a little bit of that. And
I'm relatable.
It's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
I'm just like you. I had a bad haircut one time. but I have to say, like, let's really think about LeBron, who's been not just in the public eye, but uber famous since age 16. He's now, we're 17 18 years down the line from that, and he's been in the public eye that whole time without really running afoul of anything or anybody except for a couple of bad PR moves.
I still defend the decision. So I'm like,
I do too. It wasn't, the optics were bad, but whatever. So all this stuff, what I'm getting at is like, I understand there's some image production here, of course there is. But at a certain point, that's just who he is.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, and part of the reason I thought Maverick Carter comes off so great is you realize like, oh, Like, this guy's a part of that, right?
Yeah.
That he's been there this whole time. And
yeah,
that,
and they're really, truly loyal old friends.
Yeah.
And also,
of course, Maverick, the natural reaction, right, is that, like, oh, this is a vanity thing. Like, you're taking your bud and, you know, the lead guy in your posse and making him charge, right? Like, that's the obvious. That's the reaction. That's what you're going to think. And then you realize, no. Like, this was a really good decision of his, because Maverick knows what he's doing. And
well, also, this is I think this is a lesson in opportunity, right? Is Maverick Carter is a kid who, had he not A, played basketball and gotten to go to that school, and B, been friends with LeBron James, like, had he had a rise in business, certainly it would have been different. But what this tells you is that, like, the idea that an entourage is always all bad is a stupid idea. An entourage is bad if they're listless hangers-on, but an entourage that works as hard at their associated craft as you do at your basketball craft is a great thing. To have loyal friends who've been with you for the whole ride, who become experts in their own field that can be a part of the business you're becoming. You know, that stuff is good. And I think in a lot of ways, LeBron bringing his crew led by Maverick along with him changed the way the NBA views this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was
weird. Really cool, man. It's really cool.
At the time when Phil Jackson made that posse comment and those guys got all up in arms about it, like, there was definitely a thought of, like, whoa, are these guys being sensitive? But, like, you now understand why that bothered them so much, and you realize, like, yeah, exactly. they were right. Like, that was messed – it was a little messed up. And,
it was messed up. It was incredibly reductive and inappropriate. Yeah.
Yeah. So good on them. And like I said, largely good on the show. This show – the only other thing that I wrote down that we kind of hadn't got to and that I wanted to say was that, like – if I'm Simmons, I'm watching this and going, oh, crap, man. Like, LeBron took the show I was trying to do and did it way better than I did.
This, like, is the show I screwed up.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's when you were talking about – when you were talking about the sort of what worked better than other things, like, the real show here, honestly, is something like an – you remember the old Bill Maher show, Politically Incorrect?
Yeah.
Something like that, with Jon Stewart sitting in the middle and LeBron and his friends as the panelists.
Yep.
That's the if you wanted to make an A-plus show out of what is, like, a messy B-plus here, that's what it is. And that's what I think Simmons could have done. But there was too much late night show in what he did, when he's just absolutely not a late night host.
Yeah, way too much. And yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Because the best parts of the Simmons show were the long sit-downs with the one with Gretzky and Bill Burr was awesome. The one with Nas and KD was awesome. Like, those were great. But every time he did sort of stand-ups or you know.
Any basic television thing was like,
right.
Oh, God.
It was a struggle.
Yeah, it was tough.
As it should be. That's not easy. That stuff's hard.
You know, and it's weird, because have you watched Pod Save America on HBO at all?
Nah.
Like
we said, I'm trying to get less politics.
Yeah. More. Well, that's just from a television standpoint, like, that they really just literally just sort of took the podcast, the live show version of the podcast, and put it on television. And it's not great TV. It's a very good podcast, not great TV.
Right.
Okay. Let's leave it there, because we already did the homework. And
yeah, that's awkward, but I guess we're done here.
Yeah, because we should. I apologize for forgetting the shop, because I did enjoy that more than a lot of the things that we talked about.
Yeah. Well, we did it. We took care of it. Everything's good. And I really got to go to bed. So bye.
Bye forever, Esperanza Spalding.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.